Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania.
Keystone of democracy.
I love your valleys and hills. I always will. You're the one great state that I am always for.
Again, we present another in the series of programs, Pennsylvania, Keystone of Democracy. Historical dramatizations showing the part our own state of Pennsylvania plays in the life and success of these 48 United States in the development of American ideals. This series is prepared and produced by the Pennsylvania Historical Commission in cooperation with the State Council of Defense in order to acquaint you better with the glorious history of our great Commonwealth, Pennsylvania, Keystone of democracy.
Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania, and no matter where I roam, you will always be home sweet home to me, Pennsylvania, my home.
Did I know Bill Jones? Why, I worked for Captain Bill Jones. And I remember once at the Braddock plant, he says to me, "Now, Mike," he says,
"I worked for Captain Bill Jones." For over half a century, these words were the proudest boast men could utter in America's giant iron and steel industry. Around his name have grown such tales of leadership, inventive genius, and prodigious accomplishment that to the workers in the steel mills, the character of Bill Jones is only to be compared to the mythical woodsman Paul Bunyan. It is the story of Bill Jones and the early development of the steel industry that we now bring you. The story begins in the little town of Catasauqua, Pennsylvania, in 1849. To the superintendent of the local iron furnace has come a young man looking for work.
"Mr. Thomas, if you'll only give me a chance, I'll promise honest I will to behave myself and work hard. And I can carry water for the men and sweep up and..."
"And how old did you say you are, my boy?"
10, sir.
"And what about your schooling? Your father is a learned man. It should be. He would want you to obtain a good education."
"I can read very well now, sir. I'd like to go to school here and learn the iron business."
"Mm-hmm. So you want to learn the iron business, is it? A worthy ambition, my boy. A very worthy ambition. I presume that your good father and mother need your earnings. Very well, then. Report tomorrow morning at 6 and I will try you out."
"Yes, sir. Tomorrow at 6.
It was under David Thomas, often called the father of the American iron trade, that young Bill Jones was to learn the process of feeding fuel, limestone, and ore into a roaring blast furnace, to learn how to tap the molten metal and run it through channels into rows of open sand molds to form pig iron. The next step forward in his education came 8 years later in 1857, when he obtained a job at $2 a week in the Cambria Ironworks in Johnstown, Pennsylvania. Here, before the blazing heat of the peddling furnace, he mastered the slow and costly process then used for refining iron. One day, there was great excitement in the yard of the plant. A queer-looking, pear-shaped machine was about to be demonstrated.
"You're telling me, Bill, what this all about, huh?"
"It's a converter, Joe, supposed to change molten pig iron into steel."
"How should you do that, huh?"
"Well, from what I hear, it's done by forcing air through the melted iron. A fellow from Pittsburgh, name of Bill Kelly, is the inventor. Says he's been doing it for years. Claims the air burns all the impurities away."
"Sure, and it's crazy he is. Why, I never hear of such a thing. Ah, some crank will be burning ice next."
"Well, it might work. Be a great thing if it did. Would make steel cheap as cast iron."
"And a fine one you are, Bill Jones. Now, what would we do then? There'd be no work for puddlers like ourselves."
"Come on, Kelly, get her going.
Very well, Mr. Leaflight. I think we're ready now. I want the strongest blast you can blow."
"I give you plenty. I put the weight on the safety valve.
Watch the fireworks, boys! Watch the fireworks!
Thank you. Kelly's first public demonstration was a failure, but a few days later he was to show beyond question that iron could be refined cheaply, quickly, and efficiently by what he called his air boiling process. In England, the great inventor Sir Henry Bessemer was also perfecting the same method. After the Civil War, in which Bill Jones became a captain, the Kelly-Bessemer patents were combined. Now, for the first time in man's long struggle with nature, steel could be produced in quantity. In the cities of Pennsylvania, Scranton, Lewistown, Bethlehem, Harrisburg, Johnstown, Pittsburgh, the mills began to roar and belch their smoke. Men were needed, men with the know-how, with ideas, but most of all, men with the ability to lead and direct others. In 1873, Andrew Carnegie was building along the Monongahela River his great Edgar Thompson Works at Braddock. One day, that shrewd judge of talent sent for Captain Bill Jones.
Come in, Captain Jones, come in.
Alexander Hawley sent word you wish to see me, Mr. Carnegie.
Ah, yes, a fine man, Mr. Hawley, an excellent engineer. I presume he's spoken of the steel plant he's building for us?
Yes, he has.
Captain Jones, we intend to make that plant into the greatest steel-producing unit in the world. The future of America, I believe, is to be found on cheap steel. Today, most of this product is being imported from England at a high price. $90 a ton or more. Do you think you could make steel rails for less money with the most up-to-date equipment obtainable?
I'm sure of it.
Are you sure, and are you familiar with the Kelly-Bessemer process?
I am. In 1871, we began rolling rails at Johnstown with such metal. The first ones ever made in America.
Then I think you're my man. Would you accept the position of superintendent of the product mills?
Would I accept? Why, certainly, Mr. Carnegie.
Now, if you'll consult with Mr. Hawley.
In 1875, the Edgar Thompson Works of the Carnegie Steel Company began to establish new world records. At the end of the first 3 months of operation, Jones had
production of steel up 100%.
At the end of the first year,
production up 600%.
End of second year,
production up 1,200%.
And with the quantity production came lower prices. Soon the cost of steel was cut in half. In New York, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, Andrew Carnegie was selling the steel needed to track the rapidly expanding railroads of the nation, to build its bridges and battleships, to form its tools and machines. In the mills, Captain Bill Jones was leading his men in a race against time, smashing down the idea that the impossible could not be done. Iron and human nature were his raw materials. He put the two together and made steel. Practical suggestions flashed from him like sparks from his converters.
Move along, boys. All together. You want to get licked by those fellows running the Lucy furnace? That hose is burst again, is it? Why can't we armor plate it? Let's wind it with a coil of wire.
Say, Jim, when you're going home tonight, take this mortgage out on Jack Sullivan's cottage and give it to his wife. Jack died in the hospital last night. Confound it, she's got 5 children.
Counseling, driving, inspiring, Jones was everywhere. He devised a monster iron box, brick-lined, capable of holding 500,000 pounds of melted metal. Into it poured the sparkling, splashing molten iron to be rocked to and fro, like the cradle of a sun god, until its contents were uniform in quality. Then they were sent on their turbulent way to the converters. And with the production came profits. Fortunes were being made. Andrew Carnegie, guiding genius of the enterprise, again sent for Bill Jones.
Bill, the company wants to show its appreciation for the work you've been doing. We want you to become a partner.
I'm much obliged, Danny, but I can't accept the offer. I'm just a plain workman. If I become a partner, the fellows in the mills, they'll be thinking I'm getting too far above them, too high toned.
Aye, man, but we must recognize in some way what you've done. What would you suggest?
Well, you might pay me a whale of a big salary.
We'll do it. From now on, you'll receive the same salary as the President of the United States.
Oh, Andy, that's the kind of talk. Give me something I can spend.
By By 1881, America's young steel industry, centered in Pennsylvania, had surpassed England and was leading the world in tonnage. From foreign lands came veteran iron makers to learn the new methods of production.
I say, Captain Jones, this is most amazing. Just how do you do it?
Oh, several ways. First is, we employ men who are young, ambitious, the kind that want to get ahead and make something of themselves.
Yes.
Then we create a strong but pleasant rivalry between the plants.
Make it a sporting proposition, eh, Watt?
Right. And then we have an 8-hour day. No man can stand 12 hours of this kind of work.
An 8-hour day.
And lastly, we use the most up-to-date machinery we can obtain.
Very good, Captain Jones, but really, don't you find that working with such reckless haste, your steel is certain to be variable and inferior?
On the contrary. The average variation is not more than 1 degree from the quality aimed at.
Most amazing. Most amazing indeed.
While Carnegie and his partners in the front office planned the large strategical maneuvers in the battle for industrial supremacy, the tactics had to be executed by the men on the firing lines. In 1889, one of the Braddock furnaces was working badly. Its contents had bridged and were jammed. A squad of workmen were attempting to remove the obstruction. Charging into the fray came Captain Bill Jones.
What's going on here? What's the trouble, keeper?
This monkey's stuck, Captain Bill. The flag won't drain.
Here, let me at it.
One more crack now.
All together, boys. Several along.
Look out, Captain Bill. Look out. The wall's breaking. The wall's breaking. Jump. Jump. We've got to take it. Jump.
Crashing through the outer wall of the furnace, the fiery contents fell directly on the head and shoulders of Captain Bill Jones, knocking him into a pit. The next day, without regaining consciousness, he died. The 5,000 workmen at Braddock were frantic with grief. Carnegie sobbed like a child. 10,000 wet-eyed men watched with him to his grave, their most precious memory being,
"I worked with Captain Bill Jones." Like David Thomas, William Kelly, Andrew Carnegie, and William Jones, established in Pennsylvania the traditions of efficient management which characterize America's colossal steel industry.
Today, still centered in Pennsylvania, this industry is again breaking world records. From the roaring converters and furnaces is flowing a flaming torrent of steel needed to forge the ships, shells, guns, tanks, planes that will win the fight for survival.
Today, as in the past, the workers who have made Pennsylvania the greatest industrial state in the Union are winning the battle of production, giving without question their time, skill, energy, money, lives to the cause of human freedom. They are again showing the same spirit that has always made Pennsylvania keystone of democracy.
Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania, you're the land that I adore. I love your valleys and hills. I always will. You're the one great state that I have always
won. You have just heard another in the series of broadcasts, Pennsylvania, Keystone of Democracy. Prepared and produced by the Pennsylvania Historical Commission in cooperation with the State Council of Defense. Search your cellar, attic, garage, yard, barn for scrap metal and rubber. It's needed. Start it on the way. Conserve all vital war materials. Put 10% of your earnings in war bonds and stamps. Listen again next week, same time, same station, for another program of Pennsylvania, Keystone of Democracy.
Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania, and no matter where.